Hello, and welcome to the Her and Him podcast. I'm Dale.
And I'm Tamara.
And when two theologians get married,
what you get is a podcast.
Well, we have a couple of announcements to make here on the front end of this episode.
We do?
We do.
Oh, I'm just kidding.
And the
I'm
first
sort
one,
of in the loop.
The first announcement of the day is that this will be our final podcast.
Of the month.
And
don't worry.
For next month as well.
Not forever. We're not going away forever.
I could hear the collective gasp through the internet that people were worried that we weren't coming back. We will be back, but we are taking the month of August off.
So I can sleep for
too
a whole
hot
month.
In the podcast room of the world headquarters of the Her and Him podcast.
Yeah.
And so we are retreating to cooler parts of the house where we can communicate with you via the written word and our blogs. And so that's where we will be. But in all seriousness, we actually have a lot of stuff that's coming down the pike that we're working on, that we're going to be working on in the month of August and into the month of September. So we're excited to work on that and then be able to share that with you in the fall months when they do come. But that'll be after the month of August, which will be a giant blank spot
September.
On this podcast. Yeah.
Yeah, after August comes September. And we don't know when the stuff we're working on will officially launch, but we know it will be towards the fall. And we're really looking forward to what's to come. And we hope you guys are too.
Our second announcement is that we have a new book coming out.
Actually, we have
two new books coming out.
You wrote one, and I wrote one.
Yes.
Separately.
They are companion pieces, like you and me.
Aww.
Like her and him, companion pieces. These books are companion pieces to each other. And they are devotionals about marriage and preparing for marriage. So mine is called Prayers for Your Future Wife, and yours is called
Prayers for Your Future Husband.
Yes, and they are 90-day devotionals for those who are looking to get married or who are dating or hoping to date and are trying to figure out how to do that or who are engaged. And so it's broken up into three sets of 30 days. And the first 30 days is how to prepare your own heart for marriage.
That's important.
Then the middle part is about what to expect and what you should be looking for in a spouse and that kind of stuff. And then the last 30 days is all about how to build a God-centered marriage. And so we would encourage you to pre-order it on Amazon. You can pre-order it now, whether for yourself or as a gift to somebody else. But maybe don't be offensive in the way that you gift it to somebody else.
No.
Like if it's not, if they're like single and you're like, I think you need this to help you start looking towards marriage. Like maybe don't do that. But
no.
In a way that you think it would be well received.
An engaged couple, I feel like that's safe if they're already engaged and you gift it to them. That feels safe. But single people, maybe read the room and be mindful of your friends.
Read the room. Yeah, so it'll be available on August 24th, but you can pre-order it on Amazon. And since we're in the beginning stages of the pre-launch, we're actually looking to build out a launch team for the book. And so if you want to join the launch team, you will get a free copy of one or both of the books, depending on which of the two launch teams you want to be on. And that is in exchange for you taking your time to look at it and review it on Amazon in advance of August 24th.
And we thank you in advance.
We do. And that'll really help us get some eyes on the book and get it into the hands of people who have some use for it. And hopefully it'll help them. And the more reviews you get on Amazon, the more likely that someone is to stumble across your book. And so we're looking for a team to help us do that. And so if you want to do that, I've put a link in the description of this podcast episode. So wherever you're listening, if you're listening on Apple, Spotify, if you're right on the website, there should be a button just below the media player there that says join the book launch team. So go ahead and click on that and fill out the form and we'll get into contact with you. And you don't even really need to be in the target demographic to be on the launch team. I think the book will actually be helpful for people who aren't in the target demographic, especially in the first 30 days. It's really all about you and your own heart. And so I think it's helpful irrespective of your relational status or your marriage status. And then if you are past the dating and engaged phase, I think those last 30 days will be equally helpful to you on the other side of your wedding day, as opposed to looking forward to it. So you don't need to be in the target demographic to be on the launch team. You can just be someone who likes us and wants to hype us up with a 5-star Amazon review. Well, cool. Now that we have all the announcements out of the way.
That was a lot of announcements.
They were exciting announcements, though.
You know when you're in church and the announcements just go on and on and on? It's like, when are we going to get to service?
Sometimes I'm giving announcements at church and I'm thinking, these announcements are going on and on and on.
Yeah, and that's why you gave the announcements on the podcast, because you are a professional at giving announcements.
You know, at church, they have this thing where they have a clock on the back wall when you're giving announcements, and you have to get it within that exact time, plus or minus like 2 or 3 seconds, because it has to sync up with the online live stream, which has its own set of announcements that are pre-recorded. So if you don't do that, there's like this weird dead space online.
Ooh, that's way too much
pressure. So you have to get it like exact.
No, thank you.
And it is very stressful, particularly when they give you like 6 things you need to announce and you have 3 minutes.
Yeah.
It's pretty wild.
Well, you did good.
Cool.
Proud of you.
Well, anyways, we're not going to talk about announcements today.
We should.
We're not even really going to talk about marriage or dating, but I would like to talk about a topic that is marriage and dating adjacent, in that it gets a lot of people in their heads about marriage and dating and that kind of stuff. And it is kind of like a boilerplate issue among evangelicals, but every once in a while it springs back up into the cultural consciousness of American evangelicals, and it is having a time to shine right now. And this is the issue of modesty, because modest, I don't know if you know this,
hottest
is hottest.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so modesty is always kind of an ever-present issue within the evangelical subculture, and it has been for a really long time, but it's currently making its rounds right now because of a recent viral video produced by one Matthew West. And for those of you who don't know who Matthew West is, he is a Christian musical artist who, in my opinion, doesn't write very good music.
Oh.
I mean, you might disagree with me, dear listener, and that's okay. But generally speaking, I feel like it's the kind of like generic CCM that would pop up as the background music to like a God's Not Dead movie. And
what if I really like those movies?
Well, I mean, to each their own.
Yeah.
I'm not going to yuck your yum. I'm just going to keep moving on with my day. But anyways.
Yes, anyways. Move along.
Matthew West really outdid himself with this one, with a recent music video that he released called Modest is Hottest, which the title alone is cringy enough.
Right.
Like, what is this, 2003? Anyways. And it's a song that was written to his daughters, and I'll just give you a snippet of what the lyrics say.
Can you sing it for us, or you're just going to read it?
I don't remember the melody.
Oh, okay.
I saw the video, and I watched it for about 7 seconds, and then I clicked away. I couldn't handle it anymore.
Mm.
But it says, these are the lyrics. Modest is hottest. The latest fashion trend is a little bit more Amish and a little less Kardashian. What the boys really love is a turtleneck and a sensible pair of slacks. Honey, modest is hottest. Sincerely, your dad. If I catch you doing dances on the TikTok in a crop top, so help me God, you'll be grounded till the world stops. I'm just kidding. No, I'm not.
Oh, man. There's so many things wrong with this.
I mean, to put it in perspective, Matthew West is in his mid-40s. So this is like mid-40s, not that cool of dad territory.
But I just love how the focus is like what the boys will really love. Like, yes.
Is a turtleneck and a sensible pair of slacks.
Well, not only that, but it's implying that the only reason you're caring about what you're wearing is because that's what the boys are going to love.
Like, well, yeah.
Anyways, I have lots of problems.
So the reception to this song was not fantastic. I don't think it's going to be winning any Grammys.
No.
In fact, it was so ridiculed and reviled online that Matthew West actually pulled it down from YouTube, and he took it off Spotify and any kind of streaming service. And you actually can't find this song on the internet anymore unless you find some bootleg edition of it. Like, that's how much the world hated it. Like, it is gone from the internet now. And Matthew West, in talking about the song, he's like, you know, it was supposed to be satire, but I guess you guys didn't get it. Which makes me think that he doesn't really understand what satire is.
He doesn't understand the definition.
Yeah, because satire is when you use humor to ridicule a power structure that you disagree with. It's when you use humor as a tool to expose how ridiculous a certain trend or powerful institution is.
So then was he poking fun at the idea of Modest is hottest? As
no,
if he doesn't agree with
he
it?
He still agrees right. that Modest is, in fact, hottest.
In fact.
But he was just trying to be...
joking, not joking.
Funny about it. Yeah, yeah. As he says in the song, mm-hmm. I'm just kidding. No, I'm not. Like, that is a very meta line in the song. And maybe he was just trying to be funny, but it did not go over.
No.
It was a total flop. And I think that's because it came out in the wrong context at the wrong moment.
And it wasn't
just not the time or place. And it was not good. It was just not the time or place. And let me explain what I mean by not the time or place. So this music video debuted at the Southern Baptist Convention annual meeting back in June. And if you'll recall, one of the main talking points was the controversy of how the SBC has handled sexual abuse allegations. And there was this call to have an independent investigation on the matter. And so we're going to talk about that, but hold your horses on that one. So that's kind of the context of where this song came into the public eye, is when we're talking about sexual abuse allegations, and then boom, here's a funny music video about Modest is Hottest. Not exactly a good moment for that.
I don't think it was thought through very well.
No, it was not. And then another part of the context is just kind of like the aftermath of kicking up dirt around the whole idea of modesty that has sparked numerous blogs and articles and Twitter wars, and now this podcast, and I'm sure other podcasts that are talking about modesty. And just this week, actually, I saw someone who will remain nameless tweeting. I will tell you that it was someone who was in the Reformed camp who had a shaved head and a beard. That narrows it down to about 5,000 different people. So he was tweeting about modesty. That was a joke, by the way. That's supposed to be funny. He wasn't wearing a fedora, though.
Oh, so. Sorry. I forgot to laugh. I apologize.
But in that tweet, he was equating wearing a bikini to, quote, dressing like a whore.
Oh.
Yeah. And so Ooh. There was a woman who responded underneath and said, regardless of how you feel about modesty and bikinis, there's no need to call women slurs, implying that they're sex workers.
Mm.
To which he replied, I wasn't saying that the woman wearing a bikini is a whore, only that she's dressing like one. Learn what a simile is. So, whew. To which she replied almost immediately, well, you are acting like an expletive. Like that? Which I thought was like the number one clapback of 2021 so far. Like, she was so fast. Like, inappropriate and crass, perhaps. Hilarious, most definitely.
Hmm.
All this just to illustrate the point that there's a lot of vitriol on both sides of the whole modesty conversation. And it's been brewing for a long time as the status quo has become more and more tenuous. And in principle, Christians would probably agree, both men Christians and women Christians alike, would agree that we shouldn't be dressing in a way that is entirely immodest. But we tend to have wildly different definitions as to what exactly modesty entails. So with all of that in mind, Tamara, what has been your personal experience, having been raised up in the evangelical world, what has been your experience when it comes to the whole modesty conversation?
So for me, growing up in the church, for the most part, this has always been central to my understanding of my role as a woman. And that being that I needed to care about modesty. What I always found frustrating, even as probably like a teenager, was no one ever cared about how boys dressed or men dressed, but there were always so many restrictions on how females dressed. And this even ended up down to like the length of my shorts in college at chapel. I think there was a time when I was told I wasn't allowed to go into chapel because my shorts were too short. And the way they regulated that is they actually had...
Did they pull out a tape measure?
No, it's actually really embarrassing, to be honest with you.
Oh, gosh.
You would be walking into chapel and just like massive students, and you're in college, so everyone's over 18 for the most part. Some 17-year-olds are there. But anyways... So you're walking in and there's a lot of people scanning your ID because you need to get chapel credit because it was like a pass or fail thing. And as they're scanning, they also have other people who are there to regulate on the dress code. And There was only a dress code.
Dress code monitors, just like checking people up and down as they go
in. Yeah, so I had one of the monitors pull me aside and say, hey, I need you to put your hands next to, like, put them straight down next to your legs. And if your shorts are underneath your fingertips, then they're too short and you're not allowed to go into chapel and you don't get credit and you're going to need to do a makeup chapel.
That's wild.
It is. And this wasn't that long ago.
And the problem, feel like that's fairly long for shorts. Like those
It's pretty long for shorts. And the issue is everyone's body is different. So some girls have like really long arms.
Those poor orangutan girls. Like if you have shorts really, down to their knees.
Yeah, if you have really long arms, then like you need pants on always. And so it's also just humiliating being pulled aside. And then you see these girls like being told to put their hands next to them and you're like, oh, that girl's getting in trouble. Like, it's just, what the heck? Like, we're actually adults at this point because we're, again, over 18 and I'm being pulled aside like a little kid and being told what I chose to wear for the day is not allowed in this space, in this room. And
did they put like a scarlet A on you or like a dunce cap or something?
Right. No, but like I said,
seems
you weren't,
like they stopped just short of that. Right?
Well, you weren't allowed to go in. Like I said, you weren't allowed to go in and you were told you wouldn't get chapel credit and you would have to do a makeup chapel. So, I mean, it was frustrating. It was humiliating. And I think like it really like devalued you as an adult and somebody who is allowed to make your own decisions. And I don't really know what they were hoping would come out of that. Like, if they were hoping they would start new fashion trends or if they were trying to instill some type of a value within the girls at the school. But all they were doing was just humiliating us and making us angry at this system. Right?
Yeah.
Like, there wasn't a solution that was actually leading to what they wanted it to lead to. So, my experience, I mean, that was a really terrible experience, but I've received a lot of issues in regards to what I've worn, and depending on how conservative the group is, those parameters of what is modest change. So in some groups, I was told I wasn't allowed to show my shoulders if I wanted to be respected as a Christian woman. And that was pretty baffling because I don't understand what's so revealing about shoulders, but I guess for some people that's a problem.
Remember when conservative Christians were giving Michelle Obama flack because she wore a sleeveless dress to it was like the State of the Union or something like that. Mm-hmm. That wasn't that long ago.
Right. Yeah. In my experience, it actually brings so much attention to girls and women and females in general, and it actually begins to like over-sexualize you. So as I'm getting ready in the morning, I'm having to really evaluate my outfit and wonder, wow, is this like overly sexual? Am I going to cause some man to stumble? Because that's my priority, is to make sure I don't cause anyone else to stumble. It's not the man's job to get his feelings under control. It's my job to make sure I don't cause anything to happen by my shoulder showing or my shorts being slightly above my fingertips when I place them next to my side. And I agree, like what you said earlier, we don't want to be immodest, but the standard is shifting and it's always shifting depending on who you're talking to. So someone's definition of modesty is different than another group of people's. And it's hard to try and figure out how you're supposed to navigate this as a woman who genuinely wants to be obedient to the Lord and wants to be in community with her fellow Christians and not be seen as some, what did the guy call her?
A whore.
A whore. Like, what the heck? That is so offensive. But there is nothing a man could wear that would cause such descriptions of who he is to ever be made.
Except for skinny jeans.
I feel like those are becoming far more accepted.
That is very true. But among certain circles, if you wear skinny jeans, you'll still be called homosexual slurs.
Yeah.
Those numbers are decreasing, but it's still
present.
But I
still feel like, and that is unfortunate. I'm not saying like that's doesn't matter. But what I'm trying to say is men do not have the same kind of pressures as women. when it comes to what you're wearing for the day. Like, how thoughtful are you 300 days out of the 365 days of the year about what you're wearing and whether or not it's going to cause someone to fall in sexual sin?
I mean, not very, but also, to be fair, I wear basically the same thing most days.
Right. But for me, depending on where I am, I always have to think about that. Is this appropriate for me to wear shorts at this event? Yes or no? Maybe not. Maybe I shouldn't wear shorts today. Maybe I need to be wearing pants in 105 degree weather, because if I wear shorts in this Christian group, I am going to be thought of as inappropriate and I'm going to cause somebody else to fall in sexual sin. Or is it okay for my shirt to not have sleeves on it? Like, there's just so many things I still to this day have to constantly be thinking about. Like, are yoga pants inappropriate?
Some would say yes. Some would say no.
Right. Yeah. Like, if I'm going to Target, okay. But if I'm going to meet people, no.
Right.
And I struggled with that as a teenager. And I remember really pushing back on the authority above me in, like, church and even at home, constantly asking, why is it okay that I can wear this to this location, but I'm not allowed to wear it over here? If I'm not allowed to wear it, then it shouldn't be allowed anywhere, right?
Makes sense.
But that's not how it goes. It's like, sure, you can wear a bikini as long as you're not in a church group. Bikinis are acceptable with your friends and when the event is not put on by the church.
Right.
I got a lot to say. I'm sorry. You shouldn't have asked me this question.
I feel like I have an interesting experience of the modesty thing from the perspective of having been in a youth group and then also having run a youth group. And I remember it always being like a thing, like shaming people who were outside the modesty code.
That's why I never went to pool functions or beach functions that were put on by the church, because I never knew what I was allowed to do. Do I wear what I own, which when I was in high school, I owned a bikini, and then you have all the girls showing up with their giant t-shirts over it. That's actually not comfortable. Like, it weighs you down in the water. So I didn't like that. Or do I go out and buy a one piece, which at that time, one pieces were hideous. And it looked like maybe you were going to be in the Olympics on the swimming team or something.
Or you just had to wear like one of those rash guard t-shirts.
Well, those weren't even popular then.
Right.
So you were always trying to figure out what to wear. And do I have my mom buy me a one piece just for this event? Like, sure, I'll wear the grandma one piece for this event. Because that's what the styles were when I was in high school. One pieces are a little bit better now.
Right. One pieces are back.
Yeah. They're actually pretty trendy.
Yeah.
So I never went to any of the, like, water-related events because I had no idea how I was allowed to dress.
Yeah. I remember doing, like, so summer camp or, like, pool events. It was always this weird thing, like, even with the guys, like, there was the rule that, like, if you weren't in the pool, you had to have your shirt on.
For the guys?
Yeah.
I have never heard of that.
Yeah. So, like, at Hume Lake, if you're not inside the pool area, you have to put your shirt back on. Like, you can't roam free on the lake with your shirt off, which is like, I feel like is weird to do to high school students, both guys and girls, because you're drawing all this attention to their bodies, where when you're 14, 15, 16, 17, you feel weird enough about your body as it is without someone trying to draw attention to it,
right,
and put shame on your body, where you're just trying to get through life not feeling awkward about literally everything in the world. And it's just like adding more awkward energy to the situation.
It is. And it brings unnecessary shame to youth students. I mean, to anyone really. But when it comes to these kind of really strict rules that you don't see in the Bible. Right, you don't see the Bible saying, like, you're not allowed to wear a two-piece. Obviously, that wasn't a conversation that was happening at the time the Bible was written. So really, what's happening now is people are creating their own rules and their own systems and their own structures, but it's actually hurting so many people in the process because it's making people very ashamed of their own body. And I think it's over-sexualizing women.
Yeah. So I remember that being a thing when I was in youth group, and then I became a youth pastor, and I was probably more lax, well, I was definitely more lax about it than the youth pastors I grew up with. And it was always interesting because I had other leaders and volunteers who wanted to be more strict about that and wanted to police that more. And so that was always a weird point of contention too, because they probably felt like I wasn't being vigilant enough or whatever. And I don't know. I was just like, I'm just glad these kids are here at this event. Like, I'm not going to be policing their shoulders and their shorts and like looking up and down 16-year-old girls to see like what they're wearing and
creepy.
How much skin I can see. Like,
that's
a weird thing. Like, I'm not trying to look at 15-year-olds in a sexual way and try to assess like the level of sexuality they're exuding with their shorts and their tank tops. You know, it's just it's a weird thing.
And
it's a weird thing to be policing that as a as a man, and to have people who are also policing that. And it's a weird thing to me. It's a weird like sexually repressive thing where it's just there's some strange stuff happening to me in my mind.
I think you point out something a lot of people don't think about is an adult policing a teenager is very uncomfortable. And I've known a lot of girls when I was in high school who they were very sassy, and their response will be like, well, why are you looking? Like, if it's bothering you and like, you're going to come over here and look at me, like, just don't look.
Clapback. Yeah.
And I at first I was like, oh no, we have to be modest. But I hope at the heart of the modest is hottest movement is they want women to have value for themselves, and they fear dressing a sort of way implies that girl doesn't value herself and doesn't think she has any worth, so she has to dress a certain way for sexual attention, which is always what I was taught. And I think there's two things to that. One, when I was in high school getting dressed, I promise you my thought was not, what kind of sexual attention can I bring? My thought was, am I trendy? Am I fashionable? Like, do I have the outfit on that's like really cute and really trendy right now? And that, like, you just want to fit in those ways. And by being told you cannot wear those things because they're going to cause somebody else to sin sexually, that puts your mind somewhere completely different. And second, if that is our goal, I don't think creating more rules and regulations is going to actually cause someone to find value in themselves. Like, saying you can't wear that doesn't instantly tell them, oh, that's because I'm valuable. Like, we're missing what we're trying to do.
Right. Yeah, there's a weird disconnect. And then it becomes about the rules themselves.
It's all about the rules, and the rules bring shame.
Why do you think this whole emphasis and obsession with modesty is so prevalent within evangelicalism?
That's a good question. I think part of it comes from our desire to be godly people. And we understand that there are certain things in our culture that we can fall prey to. And a lot of that is sexual sin, right? So sexual sin is a big deal. And we've talked about this in the past, that sexual sin is really important to the church in terms of topics and how we want to prevent it and how important it is in our conferences and especially to our youth students. So we really blow up this topic and we want to put all eyes on it as if it's the ultimate sin to fall into sexual sin. And so we want to prevent it in whatever way we can. And it really comes down to the woman making sure that she doesn't cause a man to sin. And I think a large part of that, unfortunately, is these rules are made by men, right? So oftentimes you have this structure where the man is the leader and then the woman submits to the man. And then the woman is the one carrying down these rules and regulations to her children. And so even if you have moms telling their daughters, like, you know, modest is hottest, a lot of the times this phrasing and this rule and the systems put in place come from men, which that's really odd to me too, because you have a bunch of men policing and regulating how women should be dressing because they don't want women causing them to sin. So they're never actually taking the accountability into their own hands. They're never being responsible for their own sin. They're saying, I am sinning because of you, so here are the rules and regulations I'm going to put on you. And then we all just buy into it and say it's the godly thing to do.
Yeah, and even the phraseology "modest is hottest" is a weird thing.
It's weird because modest
is not like not hottest. It is modest. But trying to bring the temperature down.
Right, because it still focuses on how can you, a woman, get my attention, the man. And as a Christian man, you do that differently than if I were a non-Christian, right? It still is putting the emphasis on the same thing, and that's the man and his desire for the woman. Like, it's just a weird thing. Why are we so focused on how the man is perceiving the woman all the time?
Right. Yeah, like, if you want to be a suitable mate who will bear someone's children, then modest is hottest in that regard, because no one wants to marry a whore.
Right.
I think that's the mentality, basically. Yeah.
But no one is saying anything about men and the way that they're dressing and, like, don't dress so hideously and maybe I will date you.
Maybe iron your shirt.
Right. Yeah. I just think it's strange how it's coming from men again. And it's being pushed on women and it's being pushed on young girls because essentially we're trying to prevent men from stumbling. It just feels very backwards to me.
Yeah. Going back to the fact that this whole Modest is Hottest video debuted at a conference where the issue of how we deal with sexual abuse allegations was a very important issue at hand. Talk a little bit about how that may have come across just a little bit tone deaf.
It came across tone deaf because it doesn't actually care about women, right? So we care about how you dress and we care about how we perceive you, but we don't actually care about you. Because when someone has wronged you in one of the worst ways they can, we didn't protect you and we didn't fight for you and we don't actually care about you. But make sure that you have a turtleneck on and pants at all times. It just goes back to show how we want to be perceived in a certain light, in a certain godly light, but that doesn't actually translate to the way we care about people. And I think the Pharisees were really guilty of this too, right? So they had all of these systems and regulations that ended up forcing them to not care about people. And I think this is the same thing that's happening. We would rather put all of our attention and all of our focus on telling you how you're supposed to be appropriate and how you're supposed to dress. But when a man is not appropriate and sexually assaulting you, we don't actually care.
Right. And I think the broader context is this whole idea that if a woman is dressed provocatively, then she was asking for it. And that has been a common slur thrown at victims to blame and shame the victim rather than the abuser. And so while I don't think that's in the mind of Matthew West as he's writing this song and trying to be funny about it, in the context, that's the way it comes across, because what we're talking about at this conference is investigating the way sexual allegations have been handled with the implication that they have not been handled well, they have not been taken seriously. Then couple that with, while we're discussing that, hey, we're going to throw in this funny video about how women should be modest. The overall effect is the same, that if you hadn't been dressing a certain way or presenting yourself a certain way, then this wouldn't have happened to you. And so you were asking for it. And so I think that's what is probably so offensive, is that, not that Matthew West was trying to convey that. I have to assume that he's not, obviously. But the fact that he and the SBC and everybody in that room and everybody who let this go through the approvals process to be shown there, they were just so unaware of the context in which they were in. And I think that's why it came across so poorly. It was like the perfect storm of like the worst possible thing at the worst moment.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the worst joke you could make at a pivotal moment.
Right.
And I also think as a further implication of that, is that there are just not any women in the room when these decisions are being made.
That's a good point.
About how we should talk to
women about how they dress.
Wives and daughters and women within our midst. Where it's just, they're not even thought of as anything other than the person we tell to be modest.
Right. And we also have these phrases that are used. And I actually heard it recently from somebody I know who's like, oh, she's just a Jezebel. And I was thinking, wow. Like, how
Someone
do we...
Someone called our vice president that.
Yeah.
A conservative Baptist referred to what was then vice presidential candidate, but now vice president as
It's just
Jezebel.
So offensive. And then we're... I mean, maybe women should throw around like, oh, you're just a David. And...
They'd be like, thank you, yeah. Man after God's own heart.
Like, oh, yes. Yes, you mean the man that summons the woman that was showering to have sex with him and then killed her husband?
We all make mistakes.
Right.
But God can still use us.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I think this is one of those topics that makes me so frustrated because it's such a double standard. If you are a woman who is acting sort of a way or dressing any sort of a way, then you are a Jezebel or you're a whore or you're immodest and you're not godly. But if you have a man who is sexually assaulting someone, we all make mistakes.
Right. I saw someone tweet the other week that modest is hottest except for when it's the president because that's just locker room talk. I'm like, oof, that was poignant. Well, I think the question that comes out of this, because obviously what we're not saying is that women should be entirely cavalier and just, you know, let it all hang out, as it were. But from a biblical perspective, what do you think modesty can and should look like for women and for men in the 21st century age? And just for context, the main verse that we're thinking about here and that most people are thinking about is 1 Timothy 2, verses 9 and 10. I actually looked around for other verses that speak to dressing modestly, and I came up relatively empty. Maybe the only thing that you could possibly fold into this is like the whole head coverings thing in 1 Corinthians, but that wasn't really talking about modesty. That was talking
right.
about the gender roles within the church, and maybe you could fold that in, maybe not. And there are some other verses that people would cite in relation to this. But their connection to dressing modestly is somewhat flimsy. But this is what 1 Timothy 2, verses 9 and 10 says. Likewise, also that women should adorn themselves in respectable apparel with modesty and self-control, not with braided hair and gold or pearls or costly attire, but with what is proper for women who profess godliness, with good works. So in the light of that verse, which is kind of the main verse that we talk about with modesty, what do you think biblical modesty looks like for us?
I think it looks like someone who cares and is mindful and thoughtful about what they wear, insofar as they're not trying to seek this like sexual attention. Because we can't deny that there is something about the way a woman dresses, right? There's something about how much she's showing or how little she's showing that it causes people to look and it causes people to look at her in a sexual way. And I don't think that necessarily is 100% something that needs to be put on her. I think men need to have equal responsibility in the way that they look at women and the way that they view women, and they shouldn't view them as merely sexual objects and view them and their outfits saying, well, if you're wearing that, then of course I have every right to look at you in a sexual way because that's what you're asking me for anyways. Like, men need to be held responsible too, but women should be mindful. They should be mindful of what they're wearing, and I don't think that means a turtleneck. And I don't think we need to be afraid of spaghetti
like it
straps.
It is July.
Yeah. I don't think we need to be afraid of spaghetti straps. And I don't think that we need to get rulers out and measure how long a woman's shorts are. And I don't think we need to be worried about her ankles and her calves. Do I think that the way she carries herself and the way that she dresses herself should be modest? Yes. Do I think there need to be exact rules on what that is? No. I don't think we need to be regulating women on what modesty is. I think it really matters that we instill value in her and we instill worth in her and we start further back, right? We don't start at what she's wearing. We start at actually showing her the way God has given her worth and value. And because of that, everyone else should treat her with worth and value. And out of that confidence and out of that understanding that she does have value and she's not merely a sex object, out of that comes care for how she dresses and also understanding what does her outfit represent. And there might be trends that older generations are just not comfortable with, but current generations don't see that as like sexy or a lady of the night, right? And we talked about that on another podcast before, where when I wore red lipstick, I was told like only women of the night wear that. That is not true anymore.
Which that's also a weird euphemism too.
Yeah, it is.
It's
but
so ominous.
It is. But just understanding culture is changing, and just because something felt a certain way to you when it was your generation is not the same generation after generation. And we need to make space for that. We need to make room for that. But we also need to really try and find ways to show women and tell women that they are valuable and that they should be treated as such because they are fellow image bearers.
Yeah. And so a lot of the modest versus immodest clothing is very culturally defined. And so when we impose the cultural standards of bygone eras on women who are living today, it really has this bizarre effect of sexually objectifying them while also shaming them for having sexuality.
Exactly.
So it's kind of like I knocked you down to help you up to knock you back down again, kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. As I look at these verses, I was looking back on them with a critical eye, where it talks about the women to adorn themselves with respectable apparel, with modesty and self-control. And the whole thing is like the braided hair, because like no one would argue that women shouldn't be braiding their hair.
No, that's today. Like a very conservative.
Right.
Like Little House on the Prairie with braided hair.
Right. A little, like she's outside the biblical mandate, Little House on the Prairie.
Yeah.
But what I've often heard pastors and preachers say about these verses is that this is how women who were sex workers would dress at the time. And now I would have to go back and look at what archaeological evidence we have to support that claim. But I'm a little bit suspicious of it as I go back and look at it, because it says with braided hair and gold or pearls or costly attire. If you're a sex worker, my guess is that you aren't able to afford gold and pearls and costly attire. Like, you're probably a sex worker because you're either enslaved or impoverished in some way. And so maybe that's not what it's speaking to at all. What it's speaking to is women dressing modestly, not over and against them exposing or being sexy or whatever, but it's more over and against them dressing in a way that is gaudy, that is flamboyant, that is a point of pride to show their wealth and their status. Because if I have all the gold chains and I have all the pearls and I have, you know, the white linens that have been bleached that way because I can live a certain lifestyle and I have people who will braid my hair for me, I think it's talking more about a self-absorption in beauty itself, that is immodest. And what modesty isn't that you can't look nice, isn't that you can't care about what you wear, you can't have, you know, nice jewelry or whatever, but more that that is what you define yourself by your standards of beauty, by your skincare regimen, by the way you do your makeup, by the way that you spend, you know, hours in front of the mirror working on these kinds of things because you find your worth in those things, that is an immodesty. And what is modest is not to put yourself in a potato sack and, you know, that kind of a thing, but that you have a healthy balance. And the thing that really adorns you is your good works.
Hmm.
That above like your physical beauty, what is most beautiful are the good works that come out of your life. And so reframing those verses, which are kind of the billy club that are used to, you know, bash in people and make their shorts longer, maybe that's not what it's talking about. Actually, definitely that's not what it's talking
right.
about. And if we dig a little bit deeper, really what Paul is saying in these words here isn't that women need to cover up, but that women need to be known for their good works more than they are the vanities of trying to stay beautiful, which
right.
is a different topic entirely. It's not about not making their brother stumble. It's about finding their worth in who they are in Jesus rather than in their really nice jewelry and their fancy hair and their nice makeup.
Right. Yeah, and I think at the end of the day, what we really need to bear in mind is the inherent dignity and value of both men and women, right? So, and when we've failed to uphold that dignity of women by objectifying them. We really need to repent of that. And some of these systems or some of these trends in Christianity might not have started by intentionally objectifying women, but I think they've led to that the more we've tried to build rules and standards around what a woman should wear.
Yeah, so I think striking a balance between your shorts need to be this long, but also encouraging women to see their worth beyond their physical beauty. There's a balance in there somewhere that actually leads to a place of dignity rather than a place of shame, which is most assuredly what Jesus wants from us as we relate to women.
Thanks for listening to the Her and Him podcast.
If you enjoyed hanging out with us, consider subscribing to the podcast to receive it automatically each week.
Also, be sure to head over to our website, herandhim.com, and you can get show notes for this episode, read our blogs, and other helpful resources.
We'd also love to hear from you, so you can email us at herandhimblog@gmail.com.
Thanks again, and we will see you next time.
Hi, I'm Zach.
And I'm Randy.
And we're from Salty Saints Podcast. We're a theology and apologetics podcast.
To find out more, subscribe at lifeaudio.com.